Hi, everybody. Cheryl Akison here. Welcome to another edition of the Cheryl Akison Podcast. Today, Dr. Craig Wax talks about losing his radio show after he countered the medical establishment's narrative on COVID controversies.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You're really going to enjoy today's podcast, hearing from Dr. Craig Wax. He's going to talk about losing his radio show after, as I said, he countered the medical establishment's narrative on COVID controversies. This sort of thing happened to a lot of physicians who proved to be accurate and correct about many of the calls that they made versus the government and public health agencies who were wrong about so much. And yet the ones who were correct about a lot of this stuff end up paying the price to this day, having their licenses threatened, being smeared and controversialized, while those who were wrong continue to hold their positions, calling shots on current medical controversies and health issues. Go figure. But fortunately, a lot of these physicians, like Dr. Wax, are brave enough and breaking away from what I guess we would call establishment medicine, or what some of them see as the corrupt medical establishment, looking for a new way, providing new resources, and trying to solve America's chronic health epidemics, which have been left for too long to languish by the system that would prefer, it seems, just to treat things with expensive medicine rather than figure out what's causing them and preventing them. So the COVID problems galvanized independent-minded physicians who are now shedding light on what they see as inefficiencies and corruption in the system and the importance of patients seeking their own information. We're going to talk about why healthcare costs have skyrocketed since the Affordable Care Act and how money interests collude with government and insurance and media to control our medical fate. Dr. Wax practices in family medicine, sports medicine, and is also a school physician. He's a doctor of osteopathic medicine, that's DO, and I begin by asking him to explain what a DO is.
Because there's actually a bit of humor on that. You know, how many DOs does it take to change a light bulb?
How many?
It takes two, one to change the light bulb and one to explain what the hell a DO is. So a doctor of osteopathic medicine is another discipline of American medicine that requires a bachelor's in a science or thereabouts with the prerequisites filled. And then there's 4 years of osteopathic medical school. And then there was a 1 year rotating internship that grew into a 3 to 8 year residency and fellowship, depending on what your specialty training is.
But it's a medical degree.
Right. So
and let me tell me if I'm correct, fix anything I say that's wrong. My impression is DOs are trained to be or more likely to be considering the all parts of a person when they're treating them for an illness. In other words, they're maybe less likely to go, you have this malady, here's the pill that fixes that. And they're more likely to ask questions about why maybe you're feeling that way.
Right. So it's more than just like MD allopathic approach where it's bug, drug, or malady, and then selective poison toxin to lessen the impact. It's more along the lines of what you said, which is looking at the whole person, all of the organs, all of the tissues, how the body works in concert with the other parts of the body, how the mind works, how the mind and nervous system governs the body parts, and something called somatic dysfunction, which Andrew Taylor Still, the founder of osteopathic medicine, who was a conventionally trained MD in the 1860s, 1870s. In 1874, launched the banner of osteopathy to the wind and started a new practice because he was tired of poisoning people with mercury and lead and such things that they were doing at the time, you know, treating with leeches and what. He moved beyond that because he was an anatomist and a hunter. He understood anatomy and he realized that nature or the body had its own apothecary built in, and you could tap into it. If you could just remove the impediments, the body could heal itself. The body is a unit, is the first rule of osteopathic medicine. So you have to think in terms of the whole thing. So if I were going to describe Adio's training and the philosophy, I would say it's a holistic discipline of medicine that lends itself to every specialty, that looks at the body, mind, and spirit of a person in formulating plans to remove impediments to health so the body can heal itself.
Tell us your position when COVID happened and how you found yourself at odds with, I guess, what we could call establishment medicine on that.
Sure. So I entered practice in 1997 after finishing residency training. And I worked for a couple of different employers, hospitals and practices and things. And, you know, 80% of doctors were in private practice and 20% were in hospital-based or military practice. Opened my own practice in May 1st of 2020 on a wing and a prayer and with a good idea to help people maintain their health. And I thought, you know what, I'll publish things and I'll get the world to quit drinking and quit smoking and start exercising and start eating vegetables. And, you know, life would be a dream, sweetheart, if you will. Having said all of that, I found myself writing in medical economics and other journals, which I was named to the editorial board after 10 years of writing for them, and was on the cover for being Meet the Man who changed preventive care. And I had a radio show for 20 years with a major Northeastern University radio station after 4 months of persistence of a good idea. And so I was in practice and I was doing all of this, and I was writing less and less about health and more about getting insurance out of patient care, getting government out of patient care. And I found, you know, the fickle finger of fate pointed me in that direction. So, you know, you have to ask all the questions, you know, is everything we're doing conventionally being told, you know, like by the FDA and the CDC and the WHO and the, you know, all of these entities, both domestic and foreign, are we being told the truth? On came the possibility of a global pandemic. And we were hearing in 2019 with the physicians that I kind of network with across the country and across the world, we're saying, hey, this thing is coming. We don't know a lot about it. Let's do some research. And we did research and come to find out that, you know, our government, our very own DOD, Department of Defense, was doing work on coronaviruses since the early 2000s. You know, the awful names that have come to bear with us, Dr. Fauci, Dr. Collins, and all the others with the FDA and the CDC and the NIH and the NAID and all of these other government acronym institutions that have thousands and thousands of people working there that aren't directly accountable to anybody, let alone voters and taxpayers. I brought all of this information to the forefront in my radio show and was doing it via phone and via the internet and providing all kinds of amazing content for people to consider. I mean, it wasn't my place to tell people what to do. It was my place to tell people what they could do if that was in their interest. So having said that, January of 2022, the radio station reopened, the campus reopened, everyone had taken off their masks that didn't work and were useless anyway, and just about everybody had stopped forcing the mRNA and DNA toxic experiment on students and faculty, and come to find out that the radio station management, and I guess it was probably university management, likely because of my content, although I can't say for sure, politely told me the station wanted to go in a different direction. Thanks very much for your 20 years of volunteer service.
So this happens to you and a lot of other doctors, and it almost, I assume, almost turns you into an activist that you weren't necessarily looking to become. But there's a whole bunch of doctors under that umbrella who, it seems to me, instead of buckling under the pressure, because certainly pressure was applied to a lot of physicians to conform and do things they may not have agreed with, but a lot of them, instead of buckling under pressure, basically went independent. And in many cases, these are very esteemed published doctors who were not considered controversial prior to them determining what was best for their patients during COVID that was off the narrative, but they were controversialized in the wake of this huge propaganda campaign to get everybody on the same page. So do you feel like this sort of turns you into an activist of sorts, somebody that speaks out about and tries to spread the word on these types of things?
Yeah, absolutely correct. Because, you know, adversity sort of either breaks you or galvanizes you. And a percentage of us were galvanized by this. And we were bent in the direction of truth and patients choosing their physicians, their planned course of travel, and their options. To backtrack for a second, not only did I lose my 20-year radio show, but also I was kicked off LinkedIn for 2 years for questioning Dr. Fauci's judgment. Also, I was kicked off Twitter for a year, finally reinstated when Elon Musk took over, and with the help of Dr. Peter McCullough, who I think is one of the physicians you were referring to when you were talking about one of the best and most highly praised and published academic and practicing physicians in the United States, let alone the world, Dr. Peter McCullough. He was fired by his employer for treating COVID patients to the best of his ability, and by a major institution where he was the, I want to say, the vice chair of medicine, I hope I'm correct, at one of their institutions. As well as, you know, an endowed research chair. I mean, I don't even have words to discuss what has happened to so many physicians. And physicians, like everybody else, are people, believe it or not. They put their pants or their whatever's on one leg at a time, so to speak. And they have to feed their families. They have to, you know, they have to eat, they have to sleep, and have to do normal sorts of things. And having said all of that, they have to be community people, and they have to, you know, they have to vote every November, and they have to do everything everybody else has to do, pay all their bills. And when someone takes away your livelihood, whether it's because you wouldn't participate in a giant genetic experiment, or because you have a certain opinion or a certain way of practicing, or a certain way of doing your business, that helps people, it's hardly fathomable that anybody would have an issue with that in what was the greatest country in the world, America, the United States.
I mean, I would say this is one of the greatest propaganda feats of all time, what happened, the successful controversialization of what would have been previously considered legitimate medical opinion and medical treatment advice and so on. And I've certainly shared my thoughts about, from the inside, what's going on with the media and all of this, but I would love to hear some of your thoughts about the media's role. Because there was a time when I think you could have counted on the media maybe 20 years ago, 15 years ago, to not be so co-opted by the special interests. And there would have been more organizations independently examining these narratives and the propaganda that was being put out and, you know, getting at the truth and looking into what was happening to these physicians. We didn't have a lot of that, or at least when we had it, you know, it was squelched, as you described, by online social media and so on. And there just wasn't a lot of pushback from many mainstream news organizations, because together, certainly we could have challenged and made a difference and gotten the facts out there, but that wasn't very successful at the time. What are your thoughts
for
on the media's role?
Thank you. Just to jump back briefly to the propaganda issue, there's a great book by a colleague, Dr. Robert Malone, who actually worked in the 80s and 90s on the mRNA pathway, not for immunity, but for actually cancer research. It's called Lies My Government Told Me, and it speaks all about the propaganda machine and all of that that you had spoken of, and a lot of the entities with interest in all of that. So I would refer people there for some more information with regard to the propaganda. And with regard to your question, specifically, what did you want to know?
Well, what is your observation as to the media's handling of these issues and,
right,
and of medical care in general? Because the media's role used to be, not that we were ever perfect, but I feel like we were more of a watchdog. So let's say there are industry effects that are not appropriate and the politicians are involved because they're getting money or benefits. At least the media used to be sort of a independent player that could come in and expose these things and provide, you know, some measure of information outside the narratives, but that's
right.
Be the case.
Well, we're pretty far removed from prior to my birth with Huntley and Brinkley, you know, where, you know, they would report on things and then you would be the judge. I mean, I grew up in the 70s with, you know, with ABC, NBC, CBS, and CBS had 60 Minutes, which was an incredible news magazine, which in the 70s and even into the 80s really tended to more than scratch the surface, but break down a lot of the problems that were out there and, you know, potentially leave you with questions. And that's important to do. And nowadays, things like CBS with their 60 Minutes is more of a propaganda magazine, and it's more, and it's disgraceful and awful to see how far that's fallen. I mean, even Saturday Night Live, a comedy show from the 70s that used to make fun of everybody of every walk and didn't bat an eye at tearing anything apart. There were no sacred cows, to being, you know, like a piece of the propaganda establishment now, just to, you know, have an agenda. And every week it's the same jokes about the same things and nothing about any other options. So it's the same thing that I've seen with the media, that people have turned away from the media with regard to, you know, what they're giving us. I mean, you have to kind of look at it with almost a jaundiced eye. I mean, it's the things that they show us, you have to look at and, you know, kind of take with a grain of salt, because now we have the internet. And not only, you know, do we have the ABC, CBS, NBC versions of things, we also, you know, have Fox and CNN and all of those news organizations, which, you know, are kind of paid to sell soap, if you will, as in the old days. But even, you know, they have kind of become more along the lines of being like soap operas, where they're selling the soap rather than actually, you know, actually discussing a fresh take on all of the ideals. So
if you wouldn't mind me giving my 2 cents on that, and I've written
please.
A little bit about it in Slanted and The Smear. When I recognized at CBS that they were certain people, not all of them, of course, I had many great years there, but there were certain factions before I quit there in 2014 that were censoring and stopping stories that were actually contrary to the financial interest. In other words, they were very popular with viewers. They would increase ratings. I was told over a period of years that these investigations and follow the money stories I did, they could tell actually drove numbers on the evening newscast. People wanted to see that type of information. And when they would squelch those stories, I started to think, okay, if we're not looking to get viewers, if we're doing things that are contrary to viewership, then there's something even bigger and more important at play. And I came to realize that there were corporate interests and propagandists who are able to control at the corporate level, trickling down to the newsroom, what we present, even and control the narrative, which became more important than making money as a news division, believe it or not. So it's a really
that's definitely a great insider's view of what happens, because you would think from the outside that viewers mean everything, because that's your commercial base. You can show everybody what you have to sell and the commercials, and that would sell the products. But actually, the people that are funding all of that and funding some of the narratives pay even more and even better than getting viewers. I mean, it's the difference between selling links and selling likes.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right.
Much more after a short break.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
So another topic I wanted to approach with you, you're someone on the inside of this. I've learned through my reporting over the years that the Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, may have had a noble goal in the minds of some people to make things more affordable. But I started to wonder how making everybody or getting everybody insured actually impacts prices, or does it make it where prices can go up? And let me give you my little train of thought on that.
Sure.
What you have to say. When everybody has insurance, much of it from the government or subsidized by the government, Medicare, Medicaid, and you know, the what do you call healthcare marketplace, it doesn't do anything to control the root cost of what we're paying, which has just escalated out of control and continue to do so. It just means the government has assured we'll pay that price. And the government has, in effect, colluded with private industry to let them charge high prices because it's no skin off, quote, government. And they're getting donations from industry to be allowed to charge the high prices and to be for that to be negotiated. And they're assured that they'll get the money because everybody has insurance. And we're all paying in ways that may be kind of invisible. So people may say, gosh, that medical visit would have cost $10,000, but I only had to pay $25 out of pocket. And it's designed to make you so happy but it's to me a mirage, because you are paying through your taxes, which have to go to the federal treasury and then end up paying the bill from the government, which is us, for the full cost or more of the cost of that $10,000. So you're paying it one way or another is what I'm saying, through your premiums and taxes, but the government's trying to give the illusion that you've got some benefit.
Right. Well, I'll give you an analogy. I mean, my analogy is insurance is not care. That is to say, having, quote, insurance, close quote, is not health care. It's just like government loans are not college education. If you think about it, it's exactly the same. The government stepped in and said, hey, we'll give everybody loans. We'll give everybody, you know, the opportunity to buy all these plans to fund things. But in the same token, healthcare will grow exponentially and unaffordably for those just paying for it out of pocket. Same thing with college education. I mean, since when did college become $90,000 a year?
Thank you. When the government assures that through loans and grants that we'll pay the in exorbitant price, then the colleges are free to charge whatever they want. And that's the same parallel that I've long been thinking about.
And you'll notice, Cheryl, that on hospital campuses, you know, on one hand, they cry poor mouth and they say, whoa, we've got all this uncompensated care and blah, 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 and all these write-offs, blah, 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 to avoid taxes. But they still have cranes building new buildings. Flashed over to the colleges and universities, well, you know, we're just barely getting by and this and that and the other, but we just built Atkinson Hall, you know?
Yeah. Well, so not to deviate too much, but my plan to solve that, which won't happen because these universities are donating so much to members of Congress to have favorable policies and laws.
Right.
But tomorrow, Congress could say, any school, any college taking a federal benefit, whether tax write-offs or getting any kind of money, mm-hmm. you can't charge for your tuition anything above, say, 20% of the actual cost of hiring that professor divided by how many students he's teaching, divided by the, you know, the cost of the building and so on, and the electric. And you can have a margin to make a bit of profit to reinvest and so on, but not what they're charging now. And any college that doesn't like that, don't take taxpayer money. Don't take federal benefits. That's simple.
And you could call yourself a nonprofit and then not pay taxes too while you're at it. I mean, it would seem to me that you have experience running a business, because business people and independent contractors have an understanding of what things actually costs. When patients come to me and they don't have insurance and they don't have, you know, Obamacare, and they, you know, they don't have a workplace plan that they can afford to buy into because it's just spiraled out of control, as you so eloquently and well pointed out. I can help them get studies and tests and labs at maybe 20 to 30% of the cost that's are presented to people. For example, you know, if you wanted an MRI or something, and they said, well, it's $1,500 to $2,000, and then there's a $500 facility fee that the government tacks on when they think it's Medicare. Well, I can get that same study for $450 tomorrow at 2 o'clock if you'd like it.
Yeah, you know, recently when I needed some imaging for my husband and there was some delay in the insurance approving it and time was of the essence type thing, I walked into an imaging center at the recommendation of one physician, and they could take us immediately if I paid cash. And what I paid, I said, can I just pay cash? And
sure.
They were telling me it would be some days. They're like, yeah, we can take you right now. And the cash price was, I want to say, like $200 for something that in some places are $1,500 is charged. And I've reported on some of this at Full Measure, how there seems to be no rhyme or reason, and we should be able to shop around and price around, because these are extremely elevated prices in some cases for the same services. But that's going off in another direction. We could talk more about that. But I wanted to segue this discussion about insurance and how it works into the notion that by getting, quote, everybody on insurance, the government in essence and the special interests that control government or influence mm-hmm. government were able to basically control us, because now if we all have insurance, we can't independently go to a doctor and say, I would like this treatment or that treatment, because insurance isn't going to cover it if it's not part of the mainstream medical establishment narrative making a pharmaceutical industry a lot of money. In other words, you can't get alternate treatments that might work covered by your insurance and may not be able to afford to get them if the government / insurance industry complex doesn't agree. So by forcing us, funneling us all into this system, it seems to me they've been able to exert control, whether it was during COVID or anything else, over our healthcare decisions to the advantage of the people making money, and not necessarily to our good health. What are your thoughts about that?
Absolutely correct on your assertions with evidence, mind you. They promise everybody Medicare for all. Welcome to Medicare, everybody. But it's actually Medicaid. We pay the providers of services damn near nothing, and you'll be treated like cattle. And you won't be able to get what you need to get when you need to get it, as evidenced in Canada, which is evidenced in the United Kingdom and other countries that have different variations of such things. I mean, if you think things are terrific, they'll tell you in Cuba, healthcare is paid for, your education is paid for, a lot of your life circumstances are paid for. However, go there, go to one of the people hospitals, and you know what? You'll have to bring your own clean sheets, your own food, and your own medicine, and see how that works for you.
Good point.
You know, just what I think there was a movie called Just Wait Till It's Free, making that same point.
Well, as I've covered on Full Measure, you know, the promise of Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act was completely different than what we've experienced. And
well, it was passed overnight by a one party margin when nobody could read it. I mean, they presented, you know, 2,700 pages at 10 o'clock at night for a vote 10 o'clock the next morning. Even a whole staff that worked for a legislator couldn't possibly divide and conquer that. You know, it was famously said, you've got to pass it to see what's in it, which was ludicrous.
Well, these bills are almost wholly written by the special interests in the industry. And Congress explains that by saying, well, they're the experts on the subject matter, which I think is ridiculous. They're the ones benefiting from, as I again reported in a previous incarnation of a story, these lobbyists that write the bills to their advantage have told me on camera, there's a placement of a comma that may make a difference that nobody understands except them as to how this is going to give a benefit to them as an industry or as a company. And they make sure that they can craft everything in the direction they want. People don't understand when a bill is, even considered, let alone passed, it's usually because the special interests and corporate interests want it, not because we, the people, have clamored for it. So you should always kind of start with a little bit of skepticism when you hear. And as you said, when both parties are agreeing on something, that always makes my hackles go up because something is typically amiss when that's the case.
God rest George Carlin. He still, looking at the things that he said and did during the course of his lifetime, makes so much sense now. So the things he said, you know, like Tom Lehrer in 1959, the Harvard professor before him, had an amazing way of helping people understand the follies of politics. You know, whenever politics gets involved, you're going for a ride. You're not going to like where you wind up, and your pockets will be empty.
Well, there are a dozen other topics we could address if we wanted to go on and on, but I thought I would see if there's anything else you think is important to touch upon today that, you know, any of the ones that I know you can talk about. Is there something that stands out in your mind you'd like to comment on?
Well, the biggest one to me is for people to be independently thinking and get their news and information to form their own opinions, which they are entitled to, by the way, no matter what anybody says, to get their information from lots of diverse sources. I mean, with regard to, you know, our neighborhood networks, our families, groups that we're part of, news sources that are traditional, news sources that are untraditional, internet reporters like Andy Ngo and people like that, like yourself, Cheryl Atkinson certainly figures at the top of that group, that basically wants to get information out for people to form their own unique positions and opinions. And that's super important. And then understand civics and get involved with politics. You don't have to like it, but you do have to be involved with it, because if not, it was once said by, I believe it was Cicero, that you don't have to be interested in politics, but politics will be interested in you.
Good point. If people want to find out more about you, where would they go?
Well, thank you. My health website is healthisnumberone.com, spelled in words, health, ISNUMBERONE.com. That's a good place to find out more information about myself, my publications, and my practice. I'm also on X, the artist formerly known as Twitter, at the at symbol Dr. Craig Wax, DrCraigWax. I'm also on Instagram at the at symbol Dr. Craig Wax, and you can see about the exercise and diet and good health information that I put out there. Plus, I'm also on Truth Social, and I'm also on LinkedIn. Again, I've been reinstated if I promise to behave myself, whatever that means.
Well, listen, I know your time is super valuable, and the fact that you were able to give me so much of it today really means a lot. And I hope to have you back sometime, but I really appreciate it.
Anytime, any subject, it's a privilege and a pleasure. Thank you for doing what you do so well, giving people the opportunity to understand and make their own choices.
Today, our information landscape is marred by propaganda and corruption, much of it influenced by the pharmaceutical, government, media complex. And there's evidence it's impacting our health in a major way. Since you're listening to this podcast, I know you're an independent thinker, and you're going to love hearing what I've learned about how it works, who's behind it, and what you can do in my new book, Follow the Science, How Big Pharma Misleads, Obscures, and Prevails. You can order from the bookstore of your choice or at HarperCollins or Amazon. Look for Follow the Science by Cheryl Akison. I hope you enjoyed today's podcast, and if you did, you'll leave a great review and share it with your friends. And check out my other podcast, Full Measure After Hours, for more original reporting and interviews on off-narrative topics that powerful interests often try to censor. It's never been more important to support independent reporting. You can do that by going to the CherylAkison.com website, click the store tab, and browse our great products. The most popular new slogan that I have on products there is, I need to find some new conspiracy theories. All the old ones came true. Proceeds support causes like the Cheryl Akison Ion Awards, giving cash awards recognizing and encouraging independent off-narrative reporting by college students and professionals. Do your own research, make up your own mind, think for yourself.
Introducing Whipped Seafoam Body Butter by Sirenae Cosmetics.
Hi, I'm Star, owner of the Lemonade Mermaid.
Enriched with the nourishing powers of cocoa butter, mango butter, and shea butter, our body butter whisks you away to a world of deep hydration. Experience the essence of the sea with every application, as this whipped delight leaves your skin refreshed, replenished, and ready to conquer the day. Visit thelemonademermaid.com and make your skin sing with the magic of the sea.